US presses allies to dump Huawei's 5G equipment, Notre Dame could be rebuilt from an unusual sorts, and the Galaxy Fold folded to pieces. All of this and more here. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Tech. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Cutting Edge Tech episode 11. I'm so glad that you could join me here today. And regarding the last week's episode, this was supposed to be last week's episode, but due to personal stuff, I couldn't actually do it. I apologize for that, but I addressed it in my Facebook page, and I left a little message there. And basically, this is going to be a bit of a longer episode because I'm trying to cover 2 weeks in this episode, so I'm going to do it as condensed as possible and getting through as quickly as I can with all these news. There's a lot. And let's start off, without any more interruptions, let's start with one of the most pressing ones regarding 5G. As you may have recalled in previous episodes, I talked that Huawei has been in the crosshairs recently due to spying and all that stuff. Well, the US isn't letting down on that. You know, they ain't gonna let it rest, you know? And it's according to Reuters, this happened on April 15, there is gonna be a Prague meeting next month regarding 5G technology based on, you know, the US and the allies are gonna be over there, and US will try to press the allies it has to keep Huawei out of their 5G technology. And they're basically doing that by the method of adopting shared security and policy measures that will make it more difficult for China's Huawei to dominate 5G telecommunication networks. That's according to the piece in Reuters. And I'm all for this, really, because honestly, I'm all in for, you know, diversity and competition within the market, but if the market's going to spy on you, I'd rather not. You know, I'd rather keep it on the sideline and be like, okay, you're not going to be a part of this. Get out of here. I'd rather do that. And the US has been campaigning really heavily on this. You know, they really want this to happen. They don't want Huawei in their communications. They've already pressed their allies that if they do keep adopting their Huawei communications, they will limit the amount of data that they will give them due to that fact. Because, of course, they don't want their data compromised. And I said in that time that was a brilliant idea and that was a good idea. Because if I was in the US position, I would totally do the same. Like, I wouldn't compromise my information just because some person has some equipment from a company that has been given the alleged moniker of spying. You know, that it gives them the moniker of them having the ability to spy on other people. And when that company comes from one of the biggest countries in the world, and they're notorious for all their mishandling of stuff and all their misdeeds, I would be in the US position on this one, and I honestly am, because I don't want that sensitive information to fall in the hands of the wrong people. And this article basically tells a little bit about what 5G networks are supposed to be going on, that 4G networks, compared to 4G networks, the 5G networks are going to be 100 times faster, at the very least. We don't know about this in terms of, we don't know about this until it actually fully deploys all over the world, you know, or at least in certain countries where it can be tested. There's still no underlying evidence that it'll be 100 times faster, but that's the theory, that's the ongoing theory. And it's crucial because the role that 5G plays or will play in the future, it will be to interconnect a lot of stuff, including self-driving cars, smart cities, to augmented reality and artificial intelligence. Like, according to Reuters, those are the few things that could be implemented into the 5G network. And to be honest, if it comes to self-driving cars, that is a very potential hazard. If someone were to be spying and know how to handle those cars, we have already seen it on the Tesla cars that they can be manipulated, that the autopilot can be manipulated by simple stickers. They're looking into that. The last time I read, they were looking into that. And augmented reality and artificial intelligence. Now, artificial intelligence is a little bit more of a touchy subject, because artificial intelligence, if left unchecked, could go rampant in the case of a hacking attempt or something like that. And it's something that I'm really, really, really keen on it going the right way, because artificial intelligence, if you can actually program it to the point where it can be helpful to humans, that'd be amazing. But if you get it into the wrong hands, that could be a very, very bad idea and a very, very big detriment to all the advancements made in artificial intelligence. There's been several cases, for example, Google DeepMind, where it has controlled, it has its own control and its own ability to learn, and it taught itself to walk, run, crouch, and jump different obstacles, you know? And if something like that were to fall into the hands of the wrong people, I'm not saying the Chinese people are wrong people, but, you know, their record doesn't speak well for them. You know, but I'm not going to get into that subject. But in any case, if it were to get into the wrong hands, or if it were to spy on sensitive information, that would be a very, very bad thing. And honestly, keeping someone who has the notorious image that has been gotten lately, I would deem it a good thing. Sure, they can do it on their own, but I wouldn't rather have it on this intercommunication that they're going to have with different countries, so that they could actually gather information from other countries, including the US. That's a whole mess that I don't want to get into. I just hope it continues that way, to be perfectly honest. I just hope it continues that way. And as always, the Huawei spokespersons didn't immediately respond for the comment, but later they actually went on and said that they're denying the claims. As always, they're denying the claims because no one wants to accept the guilt that they have. And if they do have it, because they're allegations so far, but hey, allegations is enough to raise an eyebrow and say like, if they're allegating this, or they're alleging this, allegating really, if they're alleging this, I should be careful, you know? It raises a red flag. That would be to me. But of course, they want to incorporate it and actually have what they say, in quote, and I quote, "The goal is to agree upon a set of shared principles that would ensure the security of next generation telecommunications networks." And that was spoken in terms of anonymity because of private conversations. That was said by someone, like I said, anonymous. But still, you know, still, it doesn't give that much credence to the fact that they could be tantamount to spying, and that's just no. I don't want that to happen, and I would assume that the U.S. is trying to police themselves and trying to police everybody, which it's not the right word. Policing is not the right word. They're trying to avert a future catastrophe that could happen by preventing someone who has the potential to spy to prevent them from spying. And I would completely, and I'm completely aware of that, and I'm completely open to that fact, because I don't want that to happen. You know, I just don't. It's just a no-no for me, right? So let's just keep it that way for now, until they've proven otherwise. I don't want anybody to deal with Huawei. I'm not going to deal with Huawei personally. So let's just keep it that way and hope for the best. If they do manage to actually get incorporated later on based on certain regulations that they give him, or certain regulations and certain limits that they put on them, good for them. Sure, I'm all for it. But there has to be some sort of limitations for them to actually get incorporated into the 5G networks. That's all I'm saying. That's what I would do. That's all I'm going to say about it. All right, and speaking of policing, the federals and the police are actually doing something that's kind of unusual, but at the same time, it's kind of good, because they're using Google's location history, the feature from Google Locations history, to track down suspects, like suspects in a crime. And that's actually pretty interesting, because it can be used in a way that, okay, if you're not going to appear in court, we're going to look for you. We know where you are based on your location. So you better appear for a court hearing or a trial, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, an interrogation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. They could be actually found if they're trying to hide or they're trying to evade justice, et cetera, et cetera. I'm saying et cetera a lot. My bad. I'm gonna stop. So they're using the technology from Google location to find out the suspects, and that's kind of good. Like, I'm not gonna lie, that's kind of good because it shows that the technology can be used for good things. Because if you're tracking down suspects for a crime, or if you're tracking down suspects for interrogation, and they don't want to appear, then you just have people, police and federals, wandering around, going all around, looking for clues, like, oh, he could be here, oh, he could be there, or you could be asking people, like, oh, where is he? Oh, like, oh, well, last time I saw him here, but I don't know where he is, and he could be here, like, this is another place it would be, and, you know, it's just guesswork. And with this, you have a much more accurate perspective and more accurate position to finding that person. And like I said, that's actually pretty good because it cuts a lot of the time needed to find somebody. Now, if you're going to find someone for a crime, or if you're going to find someone for interrogation, it's actually a faster method of acquiring said person. So I'm all for it, like, really. It's actually pretty interesting that they started using this only in 2016. According to this article in Gizmodo, it says here, and I quote from the New York Times, it says, "The practice was first used by federal agents in 2016, according to Google employees, and first publicly reported last year in North Carolina. It has since spread to local departments across the country, including in California, Florida, Minnesota, and Washington. This year, one Google employee said, the company received as many as 180 requests in 1 week. Google declined to confirm precise numbers." All right, but they're just trying to save their tail. The technique illustrates a phenomenon privacy advocates has long referred to as the "if you build it, they will come" principle. Anytime a technology company creates a system that could be used in surveillance, law enforcement inevitably comes knocking. Of course they will. You know, they have to get their hands on any methods that they can to get people, you know. Sensor Vault, according to Google employee, includes detailed location records involving at least hundreds of millions of devices worldwide and dating back nearly a decade. So they have a pretty long database to go to. And like I said, I'm all for this because if you have the capacity to find somebody that you have been tracking down for ages and ages and ages and ages and haven't found the person, this would be a perfect way to actually gather the location, the precise location of that person. And most people don't actually realize this, but sometimes their locations are on and they don't even realize it until it's too late. You know, until they open up maps and everything, they just think of it as like, oh, it's something normal. In my case, I like to keep my location off, but let's be honest, the location is not really off. You just eliminate the location for certain applications. You cut the location service for certain applications, but let's be real here. The location services is always on. They always have the precise location of where you are, based on where you connect to the internet or based on your IP address, etc., etc. You know, that's why they use VPNs to hide those things, to hide IP addresses and locations. But let's be real here. You're never completely hidden or off the radar, as they say. You know, they're always going to gather some sort of information that will pinpoint at least in an approximation area of where you are. You know, have like some sort of like, oh, he should be in a 2 mile radius from this point onward. And there's always going to be that thing. So you're never completely off the radar. But to be perfectly honest, I think this technology could be used to cut a lot of time in searching for people. And like they say, if you build it, they will come. Of course it was bound to happen. Sooner or later, I'm just surprised it took this long. To be perfectly honest, I'm just surprised it took this long to actually implement it into their, or try to at least implement it into their proceedings. I was surprised it took this long, and I'm not gonna lie. So let's just see where this goes. Hopefully, hopefully, but this is wishful thinking. Hopefully they won't use it to actually, you know, track people for nefarious purposes. Let's just hope it doesn't get to that point. But like I said, it could be wishful thinking. But let's see how it goes. Like, so far, if they're using it for that specific purpose, I'm all for it. Like, go for it. I don't really care. Like, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. Simple as that. All right. Anyways, we'll be right back with some more here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Don't go anywhere, guys. There's more to come. Back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me. Now, for those of you who have kept up with the news, there was a hugely devastating moment in history that happened last week on April 16th, if I'm not mistaken, and that was the Notre Dame Cathedral burning to the ground. Well, it didn't actually burn entirely to the ground, but so far, the huge spire that was in the middle of it collapsed in the fire. And although the artifacts inside, most of the artifacts, if not all of them, were saved before the fire started or during the fire, because I heard that someone actually entered and got two sacred artifacts. I think it was the Crown of Thorns and the Blessed Sacrament, if I'm not mistaken. It took those two artifacts and came back out. But the rest of the cathedral, I think the building in the middle and the spire, collapsed in the fire and it got really badly damaged. All that history that involved the cathedral is basically gone. So imagine, this cathedral holds so much meaning that not even the Nazis, during their invasion of France, would even dare to actually... demolish the cathedral. It was that important. But despite the fact that the cathedral has been rebuilt, but nonetheless, this is a site that kind of gets you like, wow. It's a shocking moment, you know? At least to me it was, because I always thought, wow, Notre Dame Cathedral has lasted for so many years. And personally, I didn't know that it was rebuilt in, I think it was in the 19th centuries, if I'm not mistaken. It was rebuilt again. Or actually, well, not rebuilt. It was, what's the word I'm looking for? It was, touched upon and kind of rebuilt in the sense of, like, curating it. Or restoring it, that was the word I was looking for. It got restored in the 19th centuries, if I'm not mistaken. And even though it has been through that process of restoring, it still held up as one of the biggest cathedrals and one of the biggest and holiest sites of the Catholic Church. I mean, it was one of the most prominent prominent Catholic churches in the world. Like, if you were a Catholic and you didn't know of Notre Dame, there was something wrong about you. Like, I would picture that. I mean, I'm not a Catholic. But it would seem that Notre Dame held that type of moniker, you know, as one of the greatest architectural marvels of the Gothic period and one of the greatest holy sites in Catholic Church. At least that's my take on it, you know, because like I said, I don't know much about the history of Catholicism. I don't know much about the history of Notre Dame. I just know that it's a very prominent figure of Catholic faith. And to see it burn down like that, it kind of jerks you at the heart, because it shows how fragile history can be. Like, my take of this was, history's so fragile, and it's so, like, deeply ingrained into our society that we barely even notice it. And, because, for example, not many people are like, hey, it's Notre Dame Cathedral, I would love to go in there, but they miss the point of the historic significance of the Notre Dame Cathedral. And despite the burning down, there is one thing that can be done, which will be done. It's being rebuilt. If I'm not mistaken, they started a funding campaign which has garnered so much money from millionaires and billionaires all around the world, pouring in money into the Notre Dame Cathedral to actually restore it to what it was. And there's one more thing, there's one more unlikely source that they could use to rebuild Notre Dame Cathedral, and that is a video game series to be exact. There's this video game called Assassin's Creed. For those of you who don't know, it's a series that is based in history. And it basically transports you into the mind of an assassin of the time. And you basically meet a lot of historical figures, and you have to either kill them or assist them or be a part of their court, etc., etc. You know, you get to interact with real people from history via a virtual reality, but you do get to interact with them via the character that you play. And there is one of the games of the series takes place in France, and that's Assassin's Creed Unity. Now, the beauty about the Assassin's Creed franchise is that they research history. They do their research on historical events and historical facts, and they display it on a video game so beautifully. Because I played some of the Assassin's Creed. I played Black Flag, Assassin's Creed 3, and a few of the recent ones. I've seen a few of the recent ones, but the ones that I've played are Assassin's Creed 2, 3, and Black Flag. I've played all of those three, and they're beautifully artistic and very down to the nitty-gritty of the history of them. And that is due to the fact that the game developers go into their research of history and try to put everything as precise as possible. And Assassin's Creed Unity, the ones that modeled the Cathedral of Notre Dame into the game, they went so far as to put each individual brick that made the structure into their precise spot, meaning that they have literally a real-life replica inside a video game, a real-life replica of the Notre Dame Cathedral down to their last details. So basically, this is amazing that they could use this 3D model of the Notre Dame Cathedral to rebuild it again. So, like I said, it's an unlikely source because you never expect a video game to be so accurate, or at least accurate enough to actually be held into consideration to help restore a historical site. For example, the Notre Dame Cathedral. Like, they went so precise, according to this article on Stuff.tv. They say here that how Assassin's Creed could save Notre Dame. That's the title of it. And despite that, like it says in here, it says Assassin's Creed is well known in its world recreation of actual locations. Assassin's Creed Unity was set in Paris, and it took the artist of the game, Caroline Mayus, I think it's pronounced like that, 2 years to perfect Notre Dame's appearance, right down to ensuring that each brick is where it should be. So, Caroline, I'm gonna call her Caroline. Hopefully I don't butcher the name. I don't know if it's Caroline or Caroline. I'm going to just call her Caroline. Caroline. So it took her 2 years to get Notre Dame Cathedral down to the brick, like down to the precise brick in the precise location to actually build it. And it continues to say that she also worked with a historian to research and build every section of the building, faithfully rebuilding the cathedral in a one-to-one ratio. They even helped her figure out the exact paintings that were hanging on the walls. With so much details poured into the game, it's hard not to see the benefits of video game and how they can also preserve history, even in its own way. So, There you go, guys. Video games actually helping to rebuild historical sites because they went so detailed into it. And in the article, it even shows a model that they started to make, a wire model that they made, and pictures of the game, of how the cathedral looks in the game. And to be perfectly honest, it's astonishing. Like, the resemblance of the Notre Dame Cathedral is so precise that they literally can use both the inside and the outside to restore what it once was. And like I said, even though it was being restored in the 19th centuries because of Victor Hugo's The Hunchback of Notre Dame, that gave interest to the Hunchback of Notre Dame. The Hunchback of Notre Dame gave interest back to the people in restoring the Notre Dame Cathedral. And thanks to that, it was being rebuilt, I'm sorry, restored in the 19th centuries, and then it came all the way up to now where it burned, where some parts were burned, and now they can use video games to actually restore it back to what it once was. That is amazing. So I'm really looking forward to this being restored thanks to the help of video games, really. Because it even has everything. I'm looking at the picture right now, and it even has the rose window, like the middle, like the circular emblematic window, the vitrine that they have in there of the rose window. That is precise down to the spaces. It's so amazing. I really hope this pulls through, and I really hope this continues to go. Of course, everything that happened to the cathedral is not, it's not something to laugh at. It's something really, really bad, really dark that happened, and hopefully they managed to rebuild it faithfully to what it once was. Because to be honest, that's on my bucket list. Like, I want to visit Notre Dame Cathedral once. At least once. I want to visit it at least once in my life, because I was really hoping that I could get to see it in its glory and its splendor, because it's such an amazing building, and I really want to go there sometime. Hopefully, if I can, I will. And let's see where this goes. Like, I want to see them use this to rebuild the cathedral and restore it to what it once was. So, continuing in the French. In the French territory, the French government actually wanted to replace WhatsApp with a secure app. But guess what? It's not secure at all, because according to Forbes.com, the French government's secure WhatsApp replacement was hacked in just 90 minutes. Okay, so they tried to make a secure instant messaging app, which is called TChap, in order to secure government employee conversations. So this was specifically made for the government employees, like government officials, government representatives, and all the sorts. And the launch on Wednesday saw TChap heralded as a secure alternative to consumer applications such as WhatsApp or Telegram. However, less than 2 hours later, things weren't looking quite so secure at it. So secure, it has to be said. So, yeah. It continues to say that, led by the Interministerial Directorate of the State Information and Communication System, that's a really long name. The lettering is DINSIC, DINSIC. With input from the French National Cybersecurity Agency, or ANSSI, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Ministry of the Armed Forces, the TChap project promised end-to-end encryption for messages which are stored on French servers with access strictly restricted to government officials. Yet within just 90 minutes of release, French security researcher Robert Baptiste had blown a great big hole through the supposedly secure, super secure application. So he decided to take a look at the app. You know, this is an app that's supposed to be a replacement for WhatsApp, because WhatsApp has end-to-end encryption, but since it's bought by Facebook, let's be honest, it's not so secure after all. But it does have end-to-end encryption that prevents outside interference or outside people from actually gathering the information. You know, if people that try to get into the information, they want to preserve that and let it reach from end to end without being altered or without being compromised in the integrity and the confidentiality. It's basically a term for cryptography that it has to have confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So they were trying to do the confidentiality and integrity part, and they managed to get it so far. At least I haven't heard anything that they managed to hack the end-to-end encryption. I might have just jinxed it. I hope not, because I use WhatsApp a lot. It continues to say that Baptiste decided to take a look at TChat, but discovered that you needed to have an official French government email address ending with @gouv.fr or @lyse.fr in order to create an account. I can see where this is going, because if you see, you need to have a specific type of end address. For example, there's @gmail.com, @live.com, @yahoo.com. So if you have a specific type of ending to your email address, you can actually use it. But, you know, anybody can use that, you know? So, for example, he decided to test it. He said, it says here, that Baptiste describe how he then performed a dynamic analysis of the open source code behind TChat by modifying the request token request. Request token is actually something that you use in Android programming that allows you to request, like the name says it, it requests a token that allows you to use the app, you know, or allows you to make anything in said app. He modified the request of the request token required to validate the account creation. And Baptiste changed his email to, and it says a long email, but it also put it @lyse.fr at the end. So that's one of the ends that you need to have in order to have an account in TChat, or in order to actually use TChat. And in his own words, bingo, I received an email from TChat. I was able to validate my account. This enabled the security researcher to log into TChat as an Elise employee and access the conversation in various rooms within the supposedly secured app. So basically, this is not so secure after all, because if you just change your email to bah and then bam, you have your email, you can have either from the gouv.fr, if I'm not mistaken, yes, and the @lyse.fr. If you have one of those two endings to your email, you can basically have an account in TChat. So that's a huge vulnerability, because many people can change their email addresses, you know? So it's not so secure after all. I mean, if you wanted to be secure, you could just create another app that could, you know, or basically implement a different method of entering into the TChat app. But to be fair, at least Baptiste actually did a good job in actually seeing that flaw. And to be fair, it's a good idea to have something separated from the regular consumer apps like WhatsApp and Facebook and Messenger. It's actually a pretty good thing, because you get to control your conversations, and since it's going to be held in a separate server that you control, it could be better and more beneficial to you to hold the data that you collect from those and be able to have its own separate security systems and not being held by third-party members. For example, if you go to WhatsApp, Facebook has it. You know, Facebook controls WhatsApp. Facebook has WhatsApp servers, so they can basically enter there whenever they want and get inside the data and gather the data that they want. If you go to Instagram, for example, Instagram is owned by Facebook. Again, Facebook has Instagram servers. It's held by someone else. And basically what they were trying to do is cut off the middleman, you know, cut off Facebook or cut off whatever service they were going to use to not hold such confidential data that is the government data. And to be fair, I applaud their efforts in doing this, but if you're going to do something like this, make sure you have better methods than just having two specific, or that one of the requirements is having two specific end to an email. You know, it's just common sense, all right? So it says here, in a statement published yesterday, the French government said that the DINSIC listens to the expert and the vulnerability was corrected in a few hours. It also confirmed that DINSIC will soon launch a bug bounty program to help detect any potential security issues. So yeah, they fixed it. So that's pretty good. At least they got that down before it was too late. But anyways, let's see where this goes. Because, in all honesty, I think the governments could follow suit. You know, they could have their own conversations in a separate place where consumers don't have any access to those. Of course, if there's like other topics that should be talked to the public, they should do it. But if they want to held confidential, you know, if they want to hold confidential talks about certain topics that they don't want yet disclosed to the public, they can do that, and nobody has access to them. So it's still a pretty good method of doing it. So let's see where this goes. This could lay the groundwork for something new. So let's see where this goes. Anyways, we'll be right back with some more here on the Cutting Edge Tech. Don't go anywhere, guys. There's more to come, so stay tuned. And we are back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me here. So, for those of you who are Android fans, just like I am, you were excited to know that the Galaxy Fold was a thing, and that Samsung was about to take the leap into the smartphone foldable phone that many people have been speculating that could happen. And Samsung took the plunge, and they did it. They managed to garner a phone that could fold in on itself, like a sandwich. It could fold in on itself. And the worst part of it was the price. God dang it, $2,000 for that phone. Jesus. Like that is huge money. But it was an interesting take on the foldable phone. On a foldable smartphone, to be precise, because there's been many foldable phones, for example, the flip phone, Motorola Razr, for example. There have been many flip phones, but a foldable smartphone, we were yet to see one. And Samsung took the leap to get in on it, in on the game, and actually unveil a foldable phone, the Galaxy Fold, it was called. And there were many names. They were saying it was Galaxy X, the Galaxy Foldable, but they ended up with Galaxy Fold. But there was a little problem that was starting to spark during these few days, and it was that the foldable screen was breaking in with people using them. And according to this article by Ars Technica, they made a delay in their line of Galaxy Folds to address this problem. But according to some people on Twitter, this had something to do with a protective layer that was put in the Galaxy Fold. But it turns out that it was not a protective layer. It turns out to be part of the screen. And it looks like a sticker, it literally looks like a sticker like you would get on a new phone. For example, I have my Note 8, and usually when I got my Note 8 out of the box, it came with a little film, and all the phones do to protect the screen. It was this tiny film that it's peelable. You can peel it off and you just continue using your phone, right? Well, people using the Galaxy Fold were thinking, oh, well, you could peel this. But according to it, if you did, it would literally make the screen go crazy and sometimes black out. Or maybe even when you use the fold, it would eliminate one of the screens. Like it would cut one of the screens entirely. Like I'm seeing pictures right now where some of them are, they look like they've been smashed on the floor. Some of them look like they've been smashed on the floor. And one of them is literally one screen is on and the other screen is not. And there was another where they tried to peel off that layer that I told you guys, and it didn't even get to like an eighth of the way, and the screen just went nuts. It went, and then it just died. Like it just went like, okay, I'm done, bye. So they're thinking that this layer, that this protective layer, could be the culprit. But in a press release, Samsung even goes into some of the problems discovered with the display so far, saying initial findings from the inspection of reported issues on the display showed that they could be associated with impact on the top and bottom exposed areas of the hinge. There was also an instance where substances found inside the device affected the display performance. We will take measures to strengthen the display protection. We will also enhance the guidance on care and use of the display, including the protective layer, so that our customers get the most out of their Galaxy Fold. So they do acknowledge that the protective layer is one piece of the problem, but of course there are some exposed areas of the where the Galaxy like hinges on itself, etc., etc. And it's good that they're actually giving this out, that they're getting this feedback from people that have gotten the phone already. It's like a beta testing ground, you know. To be fair, I was completely stoked when I found that Samsung was actually going to go into the foldable smartphones. And, well, to be fair, what killed me was the price, because, hey, $2,000 for a phone? Like, no. My phone cost, I think my phone was priced when it came out at $800, and the Galaxy Note 9 was at $900. And the Note 10 is priced at $1,200, if I'm not mistaken. No, the Note 9 was priced at $1,000, and the Note 10 was $1,200. The Note 8 was at $800. That's, if I'm not mistaken, it was at $800, $900 at max. The Note 8 didn't reach the $1,000 mark, but you know, they're getting more and more expensive, and I was like, okay, well, I guess the Note 8 could be good, but then the Note 9 came out, and I was like, ugh, $1,000. I mean, it's okay. It looks bigger, it looks better, but $1,000, geez. And then the Note 10, they're speculating that it'll be in the $1,200 mark. I was like, wow, that is expensive. But then Samsung came with the Galaxy Fold. And bam, $2,000. Like, oh, okay, that's a hit. That's a hit to my pocket. Of course, to be fair, even though I wish I could, I'm not gonna buy it. It's way too expensive. Like, I'm not gonna go for a Galaxy Fold, and especially with all the problems that it's gonna have. With all the problems that it's having, I would much rather steer clear from that until it's proven technology. But with this article continues to say that this was only discovered now and not during testing is pretty strange. Samsung's admission that it will be tweaking the design of the Galaxy Fold this late into the production is also unprecedented. The theory of the Galaxy Fold launch being rushed to market is looking more plausible with each passing day. Because it was this ongoing talk that, oh, Galaxy, Samsung to get the Galaxy line into the foldable phones was going to be like, oh, we're just going to throw him out there, slap him a phone. Here's a phone that can fold on itself. There you have it. We're the first one to do it. And there were people that saying that, oh, that's rushed. If you're going to do something this big and this ambitious, take your time. But then all of a sudden it was like, okay, well, it's going to take a few years. Then it was going to take a few months. Then Samsung said that we're very close to getting it. And then bam, here it is. Here's the Galaxy Fold. Hey guys, we made it. We did it. And then all of a sudden, boom, these problems starting to arise. So, Galaxy, get your stuff together. Samsung, I keep calling you Galaxy. It's because their flagship lines are Galaxies, and I keep confusing them. Samsung Electronics. There you go. Samsung Electronics, get your stuff together. All right? Make sure to do this right. Because you basically rushed production on this. It looks this way. I don't know if it was this way, but it certainly looks this way, and it looks bad. It looks like the Note 7 incident. You know, remember that there was a few years ago, they tried to release a Note 7 way too quickly. Like, you could tell that they were rushing the Note 7. And what happened to that? Boom! They started exploding, literally. Boom, literally. They started blowing up in people's hands. It started catching on fire on airplane rides. It was a disaster. It was a PR nightmare. And they had to recall each and every single one of the Note 7s. I know of people that stuck to their Note 7s, and they've handled it without any problems. Eventually, they got it replaced by the Note 8, if I'm not mistaken. I think they were going to replace them. For those that kept it for a longer time, they were going to replace it with another Samsung of their choosing, with another Galaxy of their choosing. And I think most people that actually had their phones completely normal, they that survived all the time, they waited until the Note 8 came out and then they changed it for that one. But still, it was a horrible, horrible nightmare that happened with the Note 7s. And they're obviously not going to repeat it because they actually changed their batteries and they actually looked into the battery component, which was the one that was bursting into flames. So they're not going to make that same mistake again, but this looks just like the Note 7, except that instead of the battery, it's the screen. So take it easy, guys. Take it easy, Samsung. Remember, it's not the first one who gets there, it's the best one that does it. All right? I know that many people will be like, oh, we're the first to actually get this foldable phone into the market. Oh, we're going to be the first to get this technology out the door with no problems whatsoever. And look what happens. Many people say that, and then all of a sudden, boom, it crumbles in their face. It blasts away in front of them. Like the Note 7. I keep going to the Note 7 because it was that bad. And people are going to remember the Note 7 for that reason only. And although Samsung has kind of recovered from that, it still haunts them to this day. And this looks on its way to that, but not in the same vein as the Note 7. So get your stuff together, come back, take them back, look back into the design, and make sure you get it right. Add the protection you need to add. Remember, this is a very fragile phone. It looks like a very fragile phone because even in the pictures that I'm seeing in the article, there was a picture that I think it was The Verge. I think it was. Let me check. I think it was The Verge. Yeah, The Verge. The Verge did a pressure test on their Galaxy Fold, and it lost rows of pixels, meaning that the pressure test on that is very, very light. So you have to be very, very careful with the fold. So, I would say go back to the drawing board, take a look at the intricacies of that, and make sure to get it right. You know, take your time. You already got it out the door, okay? You guys are the first ones to get a foldable phone out the door. If that's what you wanted, you did it. You did it wrong, but you did it. You know, it's still there. But get it right because they're not going to remember. They're going to remember you, of course, because, oh, you guys were the first ones to get it out. But in the end, if many people or many companies get into that game, who will be remembered as the one who did it the best? That's what you got to look for. Remember, it's not the first one that gets there, even though it has a lot of things to do. But it's not the first one that gets there, it's the one that lasts or the one that does it better. You know? Because in my case, I love Android. I'm not gonna lie. I love Android, I'm an Android fan. And I love Android because you can do a lot of stuff with Android that you can't do with iPhone because iPhone is so strictly and so tightly secured and so tightly locked that you can't do anything with it. Like, there's nothing you can do that is not within the boundaries of what iPhone lets you do. Granted, it has helped them in certain departments, but at the same time, it's a disadvantage because you don't get to fully get into the intricacies and get to exploit all of the resources that the phone allows you to have. You know, they put these all-powerful phones like, oh my god, this phone has 5G capability, for example, or oh my god, this phone has Bluetooth X.X, which is a random number, insert random number here. And they did it, but then all of a sudden it blows up in their face because it has a lot of problems, etc., etc. And then they have to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, well, for next one, we're gonna do this. But the ones that already have it, we're gonna put a bug fix, or we're gonna do some software updates, or they're gonna get a recall, and then we're gonna give you another one better because we found out the problem, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, Samsung, take it back, go slowly, think about this, all right? Sit down. Think about the design, think what you have to change, think what is good, what is bad, and make sure to actually, like you said, to let the consumers know how to take care of it, because that was a flaw of you. That was a flaw of Samsung not to tell people to not remove the quote-unquote protective, the screen protector, because that would cause the phone to go haywire and the screen to go nuts. They failed to say that, and because of that, now people are starting to get a notice of that. So get it back, bring it back, think about it, and then put it back out there. And there, problem solved, hopefully. But anyways, guys, thank you so much for joining me here on the Cutting Edge Tech. This has been a bit of a longer episode than usual. I had to cover 2 weeks because last week I couldn't do the episode due to personal reasons. Thank you so much for those who have listened to the other episodes of the podcast while the week was off. I really appreciate the support that you guys give me. It means the world to me. For real, it means the world to me that you guys actually want to hear me and want to listen to me. It feels good, you know. It feels nice to know that people out there want to know more about what's going on in the tech world, because that doesn't give that much light in recent times. Mostly there's going to be like politics this, or incidents this, or world politics this, health this, but they don't give much credit to the technology world, you know, and that's why I took it upon myself to actually get a podcast going. I know there's tons of others, but I like to put my own voice and my own thoughts of what the technology world is doing at the moment, and some of the good things, some of the bad things, some of the not so great things, and some of the horrible things, because there's tons of things that could happen bad. But anyways, it feels good, you know, and I really appreciate you guys giving me the chance to actually listen to me and give me back criticism and give me back positive thinking and positive vibes and a lot of blessings, because this really means the world to me, and I'm really happy to actually get this going. So thank you guys so much. I blabbered on a lot, so I'm just going to cut it here. So to wrap this up, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for joining me, and as always, keep it techie, my friends. I'll see you guys next Wednesday. And don't forget to like my page on Facebook. I really appreciate it if you do. And spread the word. Spread the love. You know, spread the technology love all around your friends and family. That sounded wrong. Don't take me up on that. But anyways, thank you so much for listening. And as always, keep it techie, my friends. I'll see you guys next Wednesday. Cutting Edge Tech is a technology news podcast focused on the latest news that occurred during the week between episodes. The opinions expressed in this podcast are strictly from the host and should not be taken as absolute facts. If you'd like to suggest a news article to be discussed in the podcast, send it to me at cutting.edgetechpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear them. Thank you, and see you in the next episode. And remember, keep it techie, my friends.